Hello, this is the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. This recording is a prayer treatment on plank number 28 of 32 of the System of Divine Metaphysics, and the original text is from the textbook of Christian Science, which is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. The original text of these 32 planks are on pages 330 through 340 of the textbook. If you have not listened to one or more of the introductions for these planks, you are encouraged to do so at this time. The buttons linking to the latest versions of the introductions are right next to the button for this recording. This plank number 28 is entitled Truth Demonstrated. There are three introductory quotes at the beginning of the textbook, and the very first one is about the topic of truth. It states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." These are words of Jesus. There's a second quote, also at the beginning of the textbook, very important for us to be aware of and utilize its efficacy. It states, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Shakespeare. And the third quote is from Mary Baker Eddy. It states, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou hear and everywhere." That also is directly connected to the topic here. When Mary Baker Eddy states that she is blessed because her prayer has been heard, it seems logical to connect what the Bible says about prayer, in which it is stated that we should pray without ceasing. And if we do that, then everything we do is living our prayer, and therefore every thought, speech, and action is an expression of our prayer. And of course, it's not a matter of God hearing our prayer. It's a matter of us being in alignment with the laws of the universe, which are the laws of God. And it seems like when it says the prayer will be heard, it means that we have been able to get our consciousness in alignment with these laws of God, which are the laws of the universe. If we fight the laws, that means that we are always going to be in chaos. We must recognize what they are, that they are permanent laws, and they affect every single individual. And of course, our concern is affecting us, because we need to get our lives in alignment with those laws if we're going to have the kingdom of heaven realized by us individually wherever we are, because the laws are omnipresent. When we think about the first quote, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," think about the fact that God is omnipotent. Because he is omnipotent, that means everything about him has the power of that statement, which is reminding us that not only is God omnipresent, and of course, God is infinite, so omnipresence covers everything that exists. So no matter where we appear to be, the laws of God are right there. And if we really search consciousness, we will find that the laws of God are within us, within our own consciousness, whether we are aware of it or not. The present design of the website, mbeinstitute.org, has many of the quotes, if not all of the quotes, that we will be utilizing, because they normally come to us as a matter of natural unfoldment of the topic, no matter what the topic is. And those quotes on the homepage are for the convenience of anyone that wants to turn their thought to the truth. No matter what we are involved in, our thought, speech, and action should be focused on the truth about the topic. And that is the easiest way to be successful in no matter what we're doing. And the only caveat is that what we're doing needs to be in alignment with God. For God is good. And every quality that is good is a quality of God. And if it's not good, then it is a misrepresentation, a misunderstanding, a misinterpretation of what it is that we're viewing. The Bible says there is nothing new under the sun. So truth has always been, and if there's nothing new, it means there is no time. In the UK, we are told by Frederick L. Rawson, one of the true geniuses of Christian Science, that the schools in the UK used to teach that there was no time. But they apparently have updated their truth to what is politically correct. And of course, politics is not based on truth. Politics is based on so-called human thought, speech, and action, which is the opposite of truth. God is not human, but everything about God benefits us in the relative view of humanity, if we comply with the laws. The title to this prayer treatment, Being Truth Demonstrated, means that we have seen the light. Now, what is meant by that? Think of what the definition of God entails. On page 465, Mary Baker Eddy states that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. If we look at Genesis chapter 1, from the beginning, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 3, that covers the spiritual record of all existence. Mary Baker Eddy explains that we should not think of that as being creation, even though it states that word, because she says that it really is revelation. And if we link that to what was stated previously in this recording, which is quoting from the Bible, where it says there is nothing new under the sun, that means truth has always been in existence. It's not new, and therefore there can be no such thing as an invention, but it's only the discovery of something that has always been true. And we're just revealing it within our own consciousness, to ourselves and to anyone else that we share the same degree of consciousness. In human terms, it is said that only young children are open and totally innocent to being taught. Therefore, it seems that that means that they have not been inundated with a human sense of existence well enough, so that they have formed thoughts that are false. For example, the thought about birth. If there is nothing new under the sun, could there really be a birth of anything? How about thinking, contemplating, that birth is a revelation of something that we may not have been aware of previously? Frederick L. Rawson states it very succinctly when he says that something that is a new discovery is only discovering a different arrangement of facts that were always true. For example, Nikola Tesla, around 1900, discovered that we have all of the source of energy directly from within planet Earth. And he discovered that fact and how to utilize it for our daily needs. It was not a new truth, only a new revelation, whereby he focused on that particular topic and connected the dots. And he did research in order to prove that what he was thinking about it was true. We may soon be benefiting from his discovery, because the President of the United States had an uncle that was close friends with Nikola Tesla. So his uncle ended up with the papers from Nikola Tesla, and then President Trump ended up with the papers from his uncle, which originated from Nikola Tesla. Everything that has been done for many years has been according to a predetermined plan, and that plan requires certain events to take place. The human brain is very slow to accept anything that is different than what it currently believes to be true. There is a huge ego embedded in the human brain. It does not want to accept anything that is going to damage that ego. Of course, if we are a serious student of the system of divine metaphysics, which is Christian Science being practiced, then one can totally annihilate the limitations that are placed upon centuries upon centuries of compounded lies to falsely impression and train and inundate the so-called human brain. The instant that one has been fed up totally with their life as it is lived in thought, speech, and action from a mortal view, and see that there just is no future, then they are prepared mentally to consider alternatives. And of course, the only real alternative is the opposite of a belief that life, truth, and intelligence are in matter, or mortal mind, or electricity, or anything that supports something that appears to be real, but is really unreal, because it is the opposite of truth. It is the opposite of God. It is the opposite of reality. In the Scientific Statement of Being, Mary Baker Eddy states, and this is from page 468 of the textbook, there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. If one seriously contemplates that statement, scientific statement of being, they will find that that gives them many tools that they can utilize to combat anything that comes to thought that is not in alignment with the perfection and goodness of God. There's another definition on page 587 of God, which is the glossary. The first definition was from Recapitulation, which is chapter 14, a summary of chapters 1 through 13, as the title indicates, Recapitulation. The textbook has two sections. One is Science and Health, which goes from the beginning to page 14 and including it, and Key to the Scriptures, which is chapters 15 through the end, the last chapter being 18, and the chapters in that section, Key to the Scriptures, is chapter 15 entitled Genesis, chapter 16 entitled The Apocalypse, which is about Revelation in the Bible, and the third one is chapter 17, which is the glossary, and chapter 18, which is fruitage. 101 pages of verified testimonies of people that are 85 in number that have been healed of 486 different problems. If one wants to find out whether or not Christian Science is effective, one may want to start with hearing testimonies of people that were actually healed. But their testimonies doesn't mean that we can automatically be healed just by reading their experience. We need to experience what we need to experience in transformation of consciousness in order to be able to experience a healing. We're trying to overcome, and this is the goal, to overcome the stigma of us being born a sinner because we had a mother and father on a human level that got together and created matter. This is what the belief is. And that matter grew through a period of incubation and came forth from the mother's womb, a human mother. And therefore, we first came into this existence in visible form at that time of birth. We have to refute that whole story as being our true heritage and our true DNA. Refute the theory that we have the DNA coming from Adam and Eve. Does it even sound logical that a rib of man was removed and made a woman? That's what it says. Look at chapter 2 of Genesis, beginning with verse 5. And in verse 6 it says, in fact it begins with verse 4 of chapter 2, and in verse 6 is a very key thing because it says there went up a mist. No one can see clearly in a mist, maybe a fish, but you and I can't see clearly in a mist. In fact, I've seen a mist, which was called a fog, that was so thick you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And you may have experienced the same thing. Fogs are common in the Midwest because they get a lot of heat and rain. So it's important that we focus on truth. The truth about man, the truth about God. Not a lie that was fabricated by duplicating an error from the very beginning. Starting with what was formed supposedly while there was a mist there. The definition of God in the glossary, page 587, is as follows. The great I am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All substance, intelligence. And the very next definition on the same page is good. It is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Since God is all of those things, could God make a mistake? There's no mistakes in spirit. Spirit is flawless. And also, under the definition of God on both pages 465 and 587, it states that God is mind. Everything mental is from mind. That includes, among other things, intelligence, wisdom, knowing. And everything about God is omni. One, only, and all. So there is no other source of intelligence, wisdom, or knowing. We may think it comes from a material, pulpy substance in the top of one's head called brain. That's a false statement. Nothing true, nothing real can come from matter. Everything true and real is of the substance of spirit. As the scientific statement of being says, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man, this is you and me, are God's image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. And we can connect ourselves with that entire statement, the scientific statement of being, by saying things such as, I am an individual manifestation of man. Therefore, this applies to me. And instead of saying there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, we could add other things or replace that word with whatever the problem is that is the topic of our prayer. In other words, there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, or in mortal mind, in electricity, in an accident, in an illness, a disease, in sin, or death, or any discord or conflict whatsoever by any name. That can include a disagreement between two individuals. Anything that is not totally and completely harmonious is covered in the very first few words, if we just add those words to the definition or replace the word matter with those specific words that are a material sense. I know of at least one case where an individual was healed of a growth above his eye, his right eye. And he utilized that ailment as a substitution or an addition to the word matter. There's no life, truth, and intelligence or substance in matter or the belief of a growth above my right eye. Because all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. And since God is good, and a growth, an abnormal growth above my right eye is not good, then it cannot be real. This is the kind of reasoning that he used. And he said that several times a day, really putting his heart into it with his total goal of understanding it more clearly every time he said it. And in a few days, instead of that growth enlarging as the belief of time passed on, it was contracting and disappeared completely without any scar or blemish of any kind. Because he was not accepting that he was defective. He was accepting what is stated in the Bible and the textbook, that man is made in the image and likeness of God. And that's stated very clearly in Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26. It states, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And then in verse 31, it says, "And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day." And if you've read Genesis, you know on the seventh day was the day of rest. Why? Because everything was done. One way that one could think of about rest is that we have separated ourselves from the belief that we are material. And we're going to be active in knowing that we are spiritual. Stating it. Repeating it. Contemplating it. Thinking about it in a way that Dr. Einstein states is utilizing the term curiosity. He said curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. So think about what that says. Question. That you really have a DNA composed of a man, Adam, that had his rib removed and created a woman. And then the woman and man got together and created a baby. Another one out of matter. Does that seem logical, even in a human sense? You may have to think about that for some period of time before you run out of answers. In other words, you may come to the point where you discover that maybe you better check out what Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics is all about. Let's explore the text from Mary Baker Eddy herself. Well, she really says that she was a scribe unto orders, the orders of God. She does not even take credit as the author. She states clearly that everything about her discovery of Christian Science is directly from God. She was reading the Bible when she was healed of supposedly a fatal fall on the ice. And she named that day as being the date of discovery of Christian Science. Here's the text. Subject sickness, sin, and death to the rule of health and holiness in Christian Science, and you ascertain that this science is demonstrably true, for it heals the sick and sinning as no other system can. Christian Science, rightly understood, leads to eternal harmony. It brings to light the only living and true God, and man as made in His likeness. Whereas the opposite belief, that man originates in matter and has beginning and end, that he is both soul and body, both good and evil, both spiritual and material, terminates in discord and mortality, in the error which must be destroyed by truth. The mortality of material man proves that error has been engrafted into the premise and conclusions of material and mortal humanity. That's the end of the original text. Let's look at each individual key point. Number one, subject sickness, sin, and death to the rule of health and holiness in Christian Science. There's lots of things that we can read in Science and Health that support that. In other words, Shakespeare's statement about there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so, and the first statement by Jesus that says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. If we're going to only be searching for truth, and the statement about curiosity by Einstein helps us in that direction, it says, keep questioning. Never stop questioning. In other words, you want to get down to the very bottom of the source when you have a problem. You don't just take a symptom and accept that as being your source. That's the conclusion. And it's not even a real source. So therefore, the conclusion cannot be accepted as being real. That's why we have to go back to the beginning of Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 to get well embedded in thought the truth that is in Genesis 1, the spiritual record of Revelation, and refute the false record, which is in Genesis chapter 2. And as we do that with more and more conviction, which comes from understanding, then we'll be able to more easily say that there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. That all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. Could there be a God if God had no manifestation? What would God be as source if there were no manifestation? what would God be a God of? Without a manifestation, there is no God. Without an artist, there is no product from his talent. Without a pianist, there's no performance. Without intelligence, there is mistake after mistake that is made because one is relying on matter instead of spirit as the substance of one's intelligence. All of these qualities of God work together in one grand matrix and interconnected relationships. In the northwest portion of California, there's a tree known as the redwood sequoia. The redwood sequoia is impervious to insects and disease, storm, fire, wind, any kind of storm. They've been able to reject. Do you know what the root system looks like? One might think that they would have a taproot that would be in the center of their root system that goes really deep, or several of them, maybe all of them, but they don't. They have a root system that is very shallow. But what is special about it? It bonds with every other root that are in the vicinity of other redwood trees. Apparently, there's not another kind of a tree that does this. They bond with all of them that are in the stand of redwood sequoia trees in that particular area. And that unity is what gives them the strength to resist and reject anything that tries to destroy them. Only if some unthinking human goes in there with equipment to cut it down, does it fall. I took a woodworking class when I was in high school. It was my last term there out of the 12 years in the same school. And I had finished all my required courses. And so I could choose anything else I wanted to take for the remainder of the year, the school year. And so I chose woodworking. I didn't know anything about it. It wasn't my hobby, but that's what I did. And when we built something in that woodworking class, we had an option of whatever wood we wanted to use. And the instructor told us about the wonderful features of redwood. It was lightweight. It was strong. Beautiful color. The natural color of it was beautiful. It was impervious to all these things that were mentioned. Insects and bugs and so forth. So it would be very lasting. If I would have known what I appreciate now, at that time, I would have never used redwood. But now that I realize that these trees are 2,000 and more years old and have resisted everything that has come upon them and totally rejected it and did not succumb to it, and that their roots bonded together in one grand unity, for the reason of giving strength to each one of them individually that was the strength of all of them combined, I would never use redwood. Because it is such a beautiful gift to have that on our planet. And if you've ever been there in the redwood sequoia forest, you will appreciate the grandiose nature of it. It is wonderful. It's like you're lifted into a new dimension of vision to see the gift that humankind has been given. And there's many things in nature that we should treat the same way. There's been some inkling in this prayer treatment about something else. And this is probably the single most important thing one can remember and practice if they want to be able to heal anything that they're confronted with. And that is what was stated previously about we can only take with us when we leave this realm of existence what we've given away, and we leave behind everything that we've taken. And that the fear of running out of something we need is why we seem to by nature want to be taking. We have to reverse that whole frame of thought. The children of Israel, when they were traveling through the desert, were told when God gave them abundance of food when they were starving, they got the message that they weren't supposed to hoard it or take more than what they needed of it, but they needed to learn to depend on the spiritual source of supply to always give them what they needed. When Jesus was preaching on the hillside to two different groups, one was 4,000 and one was 5,000, and they state very clearly in the Bible, the writer does, that is men plus women and children, not even including the women and children in the count. So you can easily assume that there must have been a wife and three or four children. So instead of preaching to 4,000 or 5,000, he was probably preaching to five times that many. So when it came time that the disciples told them everybody was hungry, they'd been sitting there for many hours listening to his messages. And how could they solve the problem because they only had a very tiny amount of food? I think it was two fish and five loaves of bread or something like that. Did he have any problem having the consciousness changed? So instead of being without, they were with supply? In fact, they had several baskets full, I think it said 12 baskets full in one case, left over. And they started with a fraction of that. So they had more at the end than the beginning, after everyone had been satisfied. Giving could be interpreted in many ways. One could be that you have come to the conclusion that your supply, that is real supply, is not made up of matter. It's not made up of money or houses or cars or beautiful wife or handsome husband or children or relationships with friends or a business, having a beautiful skill of a homemaker. No. Anything that is on a material basis is not included. Now, things such as a skill, that could very well be considered, and it is spiritual. So, the skill of a homemaker, for example, that is spiritual. The skill of anyone that has come about it by understanding the principles of it, that is spiritual. Ashkenazi, Vladimir Ashkenazi, probably one of the greatest pianists of all time. He was from Russia, as are many of the very top performers that are artists, and in other fields. He was asked one time during a Q&A period that he offered the public in a performance, and this was from apparently a very staunch critic, someone that knew music very well, and he said, "How is it that you can perform time after time with such perfection?" Vladimir Ashkenazi stated in few words the answer that was such a mystery before he gave the answer. He said, "I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me." You see, he got himself totally out of the picture. He wasn't even doing the playing. The music was doing the playing because he got himself out of the way. He got a limited sense of a human out of the way and let the divine sense of the infinite mind that is all action do the performance. He was also a conductor. And he conducted himself the same way. How many activities that we are involved in are we getting ourselves out of the way? There are three movies that are recommended by the Institute. One is Remember the Goal. Another one is Pay It Forward. And another one is Stand and Deliver. Now, the first two, there's not a single word of profanity in it, but the third one, it has profanity, so you have to block that out. But the first one, Remember the Goal, it's about a high school coach of a women's cross-country team, and they'd never won the state championship, much to their dismay. And they hired this new coach that they thought had promise of breaking the mold of failure. And she certainly did teach differently than anyone had ever taught before, of which they were aware. And they fought her tooth and nail, just like the people who attacked Jesus. They'd never known of anyone that could heal. Well, she started out training them on endurance. She didn't care whether they won any meet because they weren't practicing to win. They were practicing to improve their skill of the principle of long distance running. And that was key to endurance. If they had the endurance, then they could run the long distance. And as they built up the endurance, they could run it faster than previously. And she said, "Don't pay attention to anyone else on the track." She said, "You are running your race, not their race. Don't even look to see where anyone else is on the track." That's what we need to be doing with our lives. Don't look at where someone else is in the development of their salvation or their skill about a particular thing. We need to be following the principle of whatever activity we're involved in. And if we're involved in an activity that is going to bless everyone else that's involved in it, or they're going to pass that success on to all humanity by being an example and freely share where it's appropriate to do so, that's going to reflect out into the universe of thought, where everyone will be blessed that is receptive to the truth about that particular topic. If we are going to give freely, we have to have an understanding that our supply is not limited, because that's a material sense of supply. But our supply is spiritual and therefore is infinite. If we get a clear enough understanding of that, which of course happens by degree upon degree upon degree, then we will give freely. Everyone has probably heard the term, freely ye have received, freely give. We just have to recognize that God, the source of all good and is good, is our source of receiving good. And if our source of receiving good is from an infinite source, then we can give without any thought of limitation. The Bible says we should tithe, and tithe means tenth part. It seems to me that that applies to an average person. Do you want to become above average if you're not already? Then you've got to be thinking of probably something different than 10%. And what is it you're going to give? If you're an expert homemaker, maybe you want to teach others, or at least offer clues that you've learned. Because as noted, the formative years of a child are when they're very young, and after that, you really can't teach them. You can try to encourage them to learn, but you can't really teach them. They have to be receptive of what you're saying, and that's up to them. Hopefully, you will nurture their desire to want to learn. But that's the best that one can do as a teacher to someone that is beyond those formative stages. And again, that's a belief that is compounded of limitation. And when you compound the thought of limitation, you put a limit on it. That's again something that we can overcome with the system of divine metaphysics, otherwise known as Christian Science. Another beautiful thing about Christian Science is that the preventative nature of Christian Science is so valuable. And of course, the curative ability is of great value, but the preventative is easy to rank even above it, because then you don't even have to deal with it. You nip it in the bud before it gets started. And we do that by following what Mary Baker Eddy says, that is guarding our door of thought. She says you should guard your door of thought like you're guarding your door in your house against thieves and murderers. And of course, that's a relative statement looking at it from a human standpoint. From a spiritual standpoint, we are above thinking about thieves and murderers, because we're dismissing those as a misrepresentation of the true man. But she has to speak in the relative to awaken those that are asleep, which is almost everyone, including ourselves. Unless we've ascended, we're partially asleep. I certainly haven't. Last time I looked, I got wet when I went in the water. In fact, I did a good swim yesterday. I was wet from top to bottom. Before I dried off, I was wet. I didn't try walking in water, but I'm sure I would have been like Peter. Maybe had good intentions when I took my first step, but then I sunk, or I would sink like he did. If we're going to demonstrate truth, we have to, number one, get a better concept of what substance is, so that when we give, we are giving without fearing that we're going to be putting ourselves in a position where we'll be without something that we really need for survival. And also, we won't even be limited to 10%. We won't even be thinking about percentages. We'll be thinking from love, which is symbolized by heart. We will be giving without thought of limitation. Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students that came to visit her and seeking help on a case. And she said, when you're walking down the street and you see someone that's in need, it can be anything. It could be a dog. It could be a person in a wheelchair. And maybe you're going to observe an accident. I don't know. Anything. Anything at all that is not total perfection and harmony. What do? He was silent. He was totally silent. He didn't know how to answer. Because he had no answer. Because he didn't do anything. He just went about his business. And she said, well, are you a Christian Scientist? Because he was silent. And then he woke up. He realized that he should have been treating his own consciousness. And where possible, give assistance. If you're in a house that's on fire, you don't sit there and pray. You run out the door and help anyone else you can do on the way. And while you're doing it, you're thinking about the one mind that is the only action and is all good, and that one mind gave man dominion over his own existence and over all matter or sense of mortal mind or anything else, electricity, anything that is founded on termed on a material basis. He gave us dominion over everything. And who is God? She gives us the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer on pages 15, 16, and 17. 15 being the introduction. And where Jesus begins by saying, Our Father which art in heaven, she gives us the spiritual sense of that and says, Our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious. So she's addressing God as being all the qualities of man, such as strength and courage and perseverance and so forth, and all the qualities of a woman, which include things such as the various aspects of love, nurturing, caring, kindness, gentleness, and so forth. If we're going to worship God, we need to be worshiping the qualities of God that are deemed all three, male, female, and child. What are some of the qualities of a child? Innocence, trust, confidence. That's what trust is. Are we exercising all those qualities in everything we do, everything we think and say? If we do, then again, we can give more generously without fear and without thinking of ourselves. Get ourselves out of the way like Vladimir Ashkenazi did. And let the music play us. Let God play us. Let the qualities of male, female, and the innocent child play us. Are we going to trust God to give us the supply we need? Or are we going to hoard in fear? Now, there's nothing wrong with having assets, nothing wrong with having physical things that are high quality. In fact, we should have. But our concept about its value must be spiritual and not material. Appreciate the quality of whatever it is, the engineering that went into it, the selection of materials that were used. You know, if it's a structure like a house or car, how about the intelligence that goes into these self-driving cars? The wealthiest man in the world, everyone knows who he is. He doesn't hide himself like most people that have money do. Well, some do and some don't. But he put out a very interesting image a year or so ago. And it showed one going down a roadway and coming to a sign where there was a fork in the road. You could go left or you could go right. And left, it was labeled success. And right, it was labeled, and I don't recall offhand the word, but it was something to do with, you know, spirituality. I don't know, maybe even said the word God. And in the past, he was trying to get the point across that he always took the left turn. But now he was giving us the message that he was awakening to the value of spirit. Because the arrow pointed right, which was the path that he was on. And he's, you know, he's the owner of X, which used to be called Twitter. And he's made many posts on there that confirm what I'm saying by questioning people. He said, what is more important? And then he would list three or four things. And one of them would typically be something that is totally material. In fact, he often puts money as being there. And he talks about, and another post said, what do you think brings the most happiness? And he would list things, and money would be one of the things. So he is seeing the light. And if you look at what his work has accomplished, it has all been tuned to overcoming limitation, in which all of humanity would benefit. He's an expert on tunneling. He's promoted high-speed transportation for the public. It could be above ground or below ground, depending on where it is. And when he sent a rocket up in the air and brought it back and landed it in the launching pad from where it came from, that was years ahead of what anyone else has been able to accomplish. And the Russians have been one of the best. In fact, most people don't know it, but NASA utilized Russian rockets for our exploration in space. Yeah, we used to buy our rockets from Russia. That's why typically there was at least one Russian on board in most of the launches, maybe all of them. I know there's only some of them. And you know why Russia is so known worldwide, not within the U.S., because the U.S. has been controlled by, to believe, some greedy people that want to destroy Russia. They'd like to take over all the land and all the mineral resources. Russia has more natural resources than any other country. And it has by far more land And the ones that have something that are nefarious in their activities, they would like to just steal it. Well, the reason Russia is so successful in so many areas of life is because they nurture those who have seemingly natural talents in those areas. And they give them freedom for everything. They can travel wherever they want. They can utilize their time any way they want. But of course, they're very much ingrained into what their talent is, and so they devote the majority of all time to furthering their skills. That's why Russia brings forth so many top people in worldwide competitions. But think about how we want to think about competition. Does God have any competition or opposition? Not in reality. Because God is all. All in all, it's stated. All, the first one being a capital A, and that means source, and the second all is a small a, meaning manifestation. And the source includes the manifestation. It's not something in addition to it, because as stated in this recording, God couldn't be God if he wasn't a God of something. And so he's a God of his own manifestation, which is everything that exists. So the one and only God is the God of all existence, and his manifestation is the manifestation of that one God, which is all existence. So if we want to demonstrate the truth, we must convert a life of taking to a life of giving, and we can do that by furthering our education on what the real substance is, which is spirit. And when we keep questioning by utilizing the tool of curiosity, as Einstein suggests that we do, we'll keep digging, never being satisfied. And why is that good? Because we will keep going up higher and higher in our understanding. Mary Baker Eddy says, infinite progression is concrete being. And as suggested earlier, all of these quotes that are provided are on the homepage. And if I happen to have something that comes to me that I quote that's not on the homepage, it would be provided the source, or it would be in the menu. Provided the source as I say the quote. So we want to further our education about what God is. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 through 9, and 4 operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. I'm not a mathematician, so maybe they have more at higher levels, but basically, I think they're all based on the function of those 4 operators and different levels of understanding. And so does the system of divine metaphysics. We have 7 elements. Like the 10 digits, we have 7, and those are the 7 synonymous terms for God, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And we have 4 operators, and they're called the Word, which is all the facts about God, Christ, which is translating from whatever we're seeing in visible form to its true spiritual nature, which is invisible, Christianity, which is doing exactly what this title is about, demonstrating truth, and therefore you bring forth a healing, and science, which is the level of ascension, where automatically we've already translated everything to the spiritual, and we're living it and experiencing it automatically. I'd mentioned those, or at least the first three previously, but I don't think I explained what they were. And of course, the four different levels of understanding are on pages 115 and 116. So if you look at those pages, you will see the four levels, starting at the lowest, which is depravity, and working up through the levels to the top. And we have to deal with the lowest level, because that's where the root is of the problem. That is the belief that we were born with all those depraved qualities. So we have to think of a ladder. We go up and down the ladder. We go down to the bottom of the ladder, which is where all the muck is. And then as we raise our thought about that particular problem and bring it to a level of success by working through the Word, Christ, and Christianity, then we will bring forth a healing. And if that's all done automatically, instantaneously, then we are working in the science level. And that's why Mary Baker Eddy termed this the system of divine metaphysics. And divine means perfect. We can demonstrate the truth. We can live a life where the truth is demonstrated. Let's just go over the rest of the key points. I think we've probably covered them all. Okay, so the first one again is subject sickness, sin, and death to the rule of health and holiness in Christian Science. And we've already talked about that. That's the definition of God, the definition of good. And if you do that, you ascertain that this science is demonstrably true. Einstein stated, after he discovered that his friend Dr. Underwood had been healed of Christian Science, he was assigned to the Atomic Energy Commission, Dr. Underwood was, and everybody passed on except him from radiation. I mean, that should have been a clue that they were messing around with evil, trying to destroy a way to destroy civilization. Trying to destroy civilization. That was the purpose of the atomic bomb. And they used it against Japan in World War II. Well, they all passed away from radiation, but he had learned about Christian Science, Dr. Underwood, and he was healed through his study of Christian Science and practice. And when Einstein asked him how could he be the only survivor, he said, "I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science and her writings." And he said, "I studied it and practiced it just like I would any other science that I've studied my whole life. And that was methodically, systematically, sticking to the truth that I had learned as I progressed to a higher degree." So after that, even though Einstein had learned about Christian Science, he only kind of treated it on the peripheral because he had spent his whole life doing what the top physicists or scientists in any field do, and that is they devote their energies to that profession. So he was well embedded in the world being matter. But he was breaking through the ice a little bit with the formula that gave him notoriety, which was the formula for relativity, E equals mc squared. And he explained it in a very simple sentence. He says, if you're doing something, I'm simplifying it even further, but this is basically what he said. If you're doing something that you really enjoy, time flies. It goes really fast. And if you do something that is distasteful, it goes very slowly. That's the whole theory of relativity. It's all mental. It's all based on what we think about what we're doing. Are we having a lot of fun? Time travels fast. Is it real hard work and drudgery? Time travels slowly. A lot of people have said that they look forward to Friday. That's because they're not enjoying their work. Whatever they're doing Monday through Friday, they're not enjoying it, and they just can't wait till the end of the week so that they can look, you know, enjoy the Saturday and Sunday weekend. It's up to us. Everything is mental. Everything is based on that. Okay. The next key point. Well, yeah, we've already covered it. And it says, you ascertain that this science is demonstrably true, and that's what we just discussed. For it heals the sick and sinning as no other system can. Next key point, number four. Christian Science, rightly understood, leads to eternal harmony. And we've discussed that. About principle. Principle is harmonious and balanced. It's self-operating. And whatever we're doing, we want to be searching for and understanding the principle of the activity instead of fighting it. And that's everything in life. And the key in the system of divine metaphysics is to make sure that activity is a wholesome activity that's going to benefit everyone, as we stated earlier in this prayer treatment. Everyone needs to be blessed. The motto of the Christian Science Monitor, when Mary Baker Eddy discovered it, I think it was 1906 or 1907, is to bless all mankind and injure none. I mean, that's basically what the golden rule is. That's the golden rule being exercised. And she says, Christian Science, rightly understood, leads to eternal harmony. And then point five, it brings to light the only living and true God. And point six, and man is made in his likeness. And of course, that's what we covered in Genesis. Genesis 1, the real man, and the definition of, well, actually, I didn't say the definition of man, but the definition of man is the spiritual idea, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. That's on the home page as well. That's man. And that's what it says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. But 26 reminds us we have to have our consciousness open. Point number 7, whereas the opposite belief that man originates in matter and has beginning and end, next point, that he is both soul and body, next point, number 9, both good and evil. Number 10, both spiritual and material. Number 11, terminates in discord and mortality. Number 12, in the error which must be destroyed by truth. So they all fit together, but they are separate parts of the same concept, good versus evil, true versus false, spirit versus matter, and so forth. And soul, by the way, where it says he's both soul and body, body is typically referred to as matter, and soul is typically referred to as something above matter, but the spiritual definition of soul is the seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling from a spiritual perspective. So if you look at seeing, are we looking at matter versus spirit so that we can separate? Because seeing means perception. separating? Are we separating the good from the evil and letting the good come fully into our consciousness and keeping the evil totally out? Because we can't mix them. Wentworth Winslow, another expert Christian Scientist, he said, think of yourself as being in a room and there's a telephone on one side that's ringing its head off, and there's a radio on the other one that is just transmitting the facts about God. He said, you have to recognize the phone that is ringing because it's making suggestions to you of mortal mind, suggestions of evil, suggestions of Adam and Eve being your real identity. He said, what you have to do is you have to recognize that it is trying to make a claim, and then you refute it, not giving it any power whatsoever. Not letting the foot in the door of the temptation of evil. Because it'll work its way all the way in if you let the foot in the door. So, as mentioned previously in this recording, you have to nip it in the bud. You have to recognize that it is a problem, and you nip it in the bud before it becomes accepted in your consciousness as fact. And what's being announced about all the facts about God from the other audio device is what we need to dwell on. We need to repeat it to ourselves often, because we're being reminded often, all day long, of all the suggestions of matter and material existence. Everything we look at, we think of as automatically as something material, and we have to get into the habit of converting it, translating it to spirit. And that's what the second function is of the Christ. No matter what comes our way, we're going to search for the truth about it, which is invisible and spiritual. And that's what Jesus did. He earned the title of Christ because that's what Christ is. It's translating from the visible material aspect to the invisible spiritual. In other words, we have to flip our thought and our attention. It's like the good and the bad gardener. They both had estates that they were in charge of their gardens, and they were adjacent. You know, they shared a common dividing line. And every once in a while, the good gardener would go out to his garden. He was really an expert at gardening. And he'd have a plant missing. And one time, a friend came to see him and wanted to see his garden. And the night before, the gardener next door, while the good gardener was sleeping, the other gardener took one of his plants. And his friend that saw that there was a hole there, because everything else was perfect, but they were going out the first thing in the morning, so he didn't have a chance to do anything about it. So he asked him, what's going on with this hole? And he said, oh, that's my best friend. He took that plant. Why do you call him your best friend? Because he reminds me that I need to flip it and make sure that the model that I am following is the opposite. Instead of taking, I want to give. So that's how he approached it, as being a benefit of a reminder. And whenever we see evil, that's what we need to do. We need to think of it as a reminder to make sure our thought is correct and that we're not accepting evil as real. And we're not going to let evil control our thought, speech, and action. Because we get nowhere fast. It's a dead end every single time. The point 13 says, the mortality of material man proves that error has been ingrained, engrafted into the premises and conclusions of material and mortal humanity. I'll read it again. The mortality of material man proves that error has been engrafted into the premises and conclusions of material and mortal humanity. That's interesting that she used the word engrafted, because that's a word that you use in terms of a garden. When you graft two different things together, it's used in fruit trees. And you can really have the same tree bring forth different fruits by engrafting branches. Now, John L. Stanton is also a very fine Christian Zionist, and let me read comments that he has. He says, number one, note how the text is becoming increasingly adapted to the human need. You know, it starts off by saying, subject sickness, sin, and death to the rule of health and holiness in Christian Science. Point number two, the higher the vision of truth and science, the deeper the insight into and penetration of error. Number three, until truth has gone to the bottom of mental action, and number four, uncovered the vanity, and number five, futility of the dual position. So we need to keep our vision, keep going higher and higher until we realize that the dual position of believing of life, truth, and intelligence in matter and spirit, they're in direct conflict. It's like I told you about the coach was teaching her students to only pay attention to the goals. And the children of Israel, they had to pay attention to what their real supply was, that it was spiritual, not material. And when we're giving, we have to pay attention to the fact that our supply is not limited. If we don't think it is, people who have been successful, really successful in their endeavors, they have promoted the thought of thinking big. In other words, think in terms of the infinite instead of something that is micro. Expand. Think outside the box. Box being the limitation of mortality, mortal thinking. Thinking only with the capacity of a brain, instead of God, which is omni-intelligence and omni-knowing. That's what we want to let do our thinking. We have to know that God is the source of all intelligence, and therefore we're not limited if we reflect God. And that enables us to reflect God more and more. Repetition. Mary Baker Eddy says, repeat it, repeat the truth until the healing is realized. Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad but thinking makes it so. We need to emphasize the truth all the time to transform what appears to be a natural path of the brain to accept the compounding of lie after lie until we think of a new child as being born a sinner. The thought of the mother has a direct impact on the child. If there's ever a time, if you understand what Christian Science, or even any inkling about what Christian Science is all about, during the formative stages, before it's born, that has a direct impact on the child. And after it's born, just continue right on. With the spiritual atmosphere being emphasized instead of anything else. Mary Baker Eddy blessed her final class in the Metaphysical College in 1898 with seven prayer treatments, which she says within the prayer treatment that they should be repeated often. I shall recite to you the prayer treatment that is based on the synonym for truth. Since the topic that we've been reviewing here and exploring is truth demonstrated. And that will be the end of this prayer treatment, unless there's any lingering thoughts that occur while the prayer is being recited, and they will be added at the end. And for your record, we also give the date and time of the recording. So please listen if you want to hear everything until it says the end. So here is the prayer treatment by Mary Baker Eddy, which is titled Diapason of Heaven with a Focus on Truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the word of God. Amen. It is January 31, Saturday at 06:55, and the year is 2026. Thank you for listening. The end.